I've talked at length on my DNA blog, the WordPress blog, and my BitChute channel on why I believe that eukaryotic DNA, such as our own, is circular in nature and not just a linear piece of DNA. I have gone over those things ad nauseum, actually. And I think it's time to just present a synopsis here of real evidence, not hypothetical, not theoretical, real evidence that there is a circular nature to eukaryotic DNA. And I'm going to present this evidence here, even though it has been presented elsewhere. This is going to be kind of a general synopsis to bring home the compelling argument, actually, that it is not a simple linear piece of DNA as they would have you to believe. So if you will bear with me, I will present my evidence to you again now. The research I did at Ohio State University could turn the concept of chromosome evolution upside down, quite literally. This is because all research and textbooks to date assume that eukaryotic chromosomes like ours contain only a single linear strand of DNA. This idea came about because genes line up in a linear fashion along the lengths of chromosomes as shown by genetic evidence. If the genes line up in a linear fashion, the assumption for our presumption was that the DNA itself must be linear. This is based upon the thinnest of evidence. Indirect evidence based upon telomere function at the ends of chromosomes. Scientists say such telomeres can allow replication of linear DNA. However, their mere presence is not direct evidence that DNA within such chromosomes is but a single linear strand of DNA. Once this supposition was accepted as mainstream, scientists had to go out of their way to support it or risk being discredited. Or to put it more succinctly, avoid being blackballed. Grants and publications fell into the laps of those scientists willing to toe the line, resulting in reams and reams of papers that also towed the line. In short, the emperor had no clothes. It was up to a small boy to yell from the crowd that the emperor was indeed naked. That small boy was me. What I'm about to show you here is direct evidence that chromosomal DNA such as our own is not a simple linear strand. The implications are enormous for many areas of biological science. I will start by explaining my theories about how chromosomes are put together in a network of circular DNAs that may irreversibly differentiate in one of two ways to generate all the cells in our bodies. This diagram was taken from a BitChute video entitled "How Can Animal Chromosomes Be Put Together Via Endosymbiosis?" The two circles represent circular DNAs. One is replicon 1 and then replicon 2, and they are joined together to create a double origin of replication. So each replicon had its own single origin, and they are binding together to create what will become an origin of replication. In this model of chromosomal differentiation, DNA circles are altered at the double origin of replication. The 3D model on the left represents the upper rectangle is replicon 1, the lower rectangle is replicon 2, and the double origin of replication is represented by where they are binding together. They're is shown by the arrow. Now, the each rectangle has looks like a ladder that's turned around and curved on itself. Now, this ladder has rungs, and the poles of the ladder are the backbones of the DNA molecules that make up the ladder. In other words, they represent the double-stranded DNA, and you're not seeing the helix for simplicity. And the rungs of the ladder represent where the base pairing occurs. So tetrameric base pairing is occurring within this double origin of replication. And interestingly enough, there is a phenomenon called G quadruplexes that are being discussed regarding tetrameric base pairing at origins of replication, involving 4 guanine nitrogenous bases. So how does this tetrameric base pairing occur? Well, in an ordinary DNA strand, the rungs within the ladder, that's called sister strand base pairing. But in the tetrameric base pairing, some of these rungs point down, and so non-sister strands can join together. So you have sister strand base pairing and non-sister strand base pairing. So as we said earlier, in this model of chromosomal differentiation, DNA circles are altered at the double origin of replication. One way of altering the double origin of replication is by excising internal sequences within the double origin, resulting in an irreversible DNA loss, which creates 2 dimples on either side of the deleted sequences. We can use a 3D model to illustrate this. There is a 2' phosphodiester bond that attaches the upper and lower fused replicons. And you can learn more about 2' phosphodiester bonds by visiting the blog. And normally, a DNA backbone includes 3' and 5' connections between a phosphate and deoxyribose sugars. But if you have an RNA ribose sugar instead of a deoxyribose, it provides a third sugar hydroxyl that can combine to the phosphate, allowing the fusion of the 2 replicons. A second way of altering the double origins of replication is shown by the model on the left, where you have the replicons separate from each other. The lower replicon remains attached to the chromosome. The upper replicon is lost. So what you have left is the lower replicon with a single origin of replication. That 3D model on the left, those 2 rectangles, they represent the separating replicons. And you'll notice that some of the rungs of the ladder are pointing down. They will soon be brought back up into each replicon so that you wind up with your original double-stranded single origins of replication. So now we're going to take a closer look at what may hold the 4 DNA strands together. The pyrimidine bases are shown in green, and the purine bases, which are acid sensitive to hydrochloric acid, are shown in red. And then there's also shown a hypothetical protein linker, which is also acid sensitive. Okay, these are actual electron micrographs of joined circles from purified DNA. The dissertation that includes all of these electron micrographs may be downloaded from the DNA blog, evolution4.wordpress.com. The bottom image on the right is also available at the blog itself. The bottom images are also available from the 1999 website, which can be emailed to you via a zip file, and I will give you instructions on how to open it and use it. Okay, in this model, we are assuming that we have treated these replicons with the acid, which causes the purine bases to come loose, leaving only the pyrimidines with nothing for them to pair up with, and the protein linkers are also gone. So this allows the two replicons to separate, assuming there is no other kinds of linkages involved. These are actual photomicrographs of circles being released from mouse nuclei after acid hydrolysis. Information is available at the blog and also available on the 1999 website. Okay, what do I mean by selective destruction of fragile sites? Fragile sites, when they are damaged in chromosomes, chunks of chromosomes become translocated, inverted, and all kinds of things are just deleted. Some of them even form tiny circular chromosomes. Those are what fragile sites are all about. So when you look at this, these things are not replicas. These things are huge complex circles. And it's very possible that by treating them with dilute hydrochloric acid for just a brief period of time, it has damaged these fragile sites and released all these different sizes of complex circular structures. And in the other video that I talked about earlier, BitChute video, these could very well be, some of them anyway, subchromatids. And the smaller ones may be pieces of subchromatids and so forth. So now we're going to switch back to the model that involves loss of internal DNA sequences from the double origins of replication, resulting in replicon fusion. Unlike the other model, there is an acid-resistant 2' phosphodiester bridge that allows these two replicons to fuse and remain stable. Such a stable bond also generates dimples, as seen in this diagram. Bent DNA, which is associated with autonomously replicating sequences, may also be involved with the stability of these dimples. Following acid hydrolysis, you'll notice there is a purine loss, but the dimple stability still remains. This is an actual photomicrograph and electron micrographs of fused circles with dimpling. The photomicrograph on the left has been exposed to acid hydrolysis. The electron micrographs on the right were not exposed to acid hydrolysis, so in either case, the dimpling exists. The samples on the right were exposed for 1 minute to DNase 1 before they were prepared for electron microscopy. Whether this had any impact on the dimpling effect is unknown. Please address all comments, requests, and our questions by filling out the contact form on the blog as shown in the next slide.